when your pastor comes up to you and says, I've been thinking about a sermon on addictions and idolatry, and I've been thinking about you. I wasn't quite sure how to take that. But thank you, Steve, for asking me. Thank you, David. That was those names are tough in that verse. I appreciate that. I don't know that I can do that well today. Well, I turned 50 last week. Thank you. So far, so good. My brother-in-law says that it's not the mileage, it's the tread wear. So, you know, I won't say how old Sue is, but for her last birthday, I brought her one of these, GPS for our car. It's called a TomTom. She really wanted one of these. So I got her this, and I want to tell you a little story. We were going to go on a trip, and so she programmed it in. Has anybody seen the movie RV? Okay. Well, it was kind of like that. She programmed it in, and Sue was driving because my driving makes her nauseated. She has some issue with, like, staying between the lines or something. I don't know what her problem is. But anyway, so she was going to drive, and we were backing out of the driveway. And, oh, you can program it with different voices, and so she programmed it to sound like George W. All right. So we were backing out of the driveway, and the TomTom said, well, you should go right here. And I knew better, so I said, actually, Sue, it would be faster if we went left. And she said, the TomTom said to go right. And I said, the Matt said to go left. And she said, President Bush said to go right. And I said, your husband said to go left, so choose. Well, she chose, and I don't like TomToms quite as much as I thought I would. But one thing I do like about it, though, is it has this cool feature where you can press a button and you can back up and get the big picture, the lay of the land, like a big map. And then you can press the button again and you can narrow in and really focus on a particular town and get the details and all of the points of attraction. And that's kind of what I want to do with today's sermon. I want to get the big picture and sort of where we are today, and then I want to narrow in and I want to look specifically at the chapters that David read, the story of Josiah, the child king. And I want to look a little bit at Mount Sinai. We're going to move the GPS and visit that. And maybe a little bit from Jeremiah, which is actually Jeremiah was a prophet who lived during the time of Josiah. And we're going to look at some details in those verses. Excuse me. When we think about idolatry, the topic idolatry, it's often easy to think about something very remote, you know, something far away that perhaps, you know, we might imagine stone or wood pillars and people in loincloths and bonfires and people beating drums. And it doesn't sound very connected to our culture today. But C.S. Lewis, in one of the prefaces to the Screwtape Letters, warned us about something that he called chronological egocentrism, which basically just means that we think that because we live today, that somehow we're smarter and we're better and we're more moral than people that lived in the past just by virtue of living today. And he said to be cautious about that. And, you know, Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, what is will be again, what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. And when Solomon, when I first read that, I thought, well, Solomon, you know, he's pretty smart, but he kind of missed the boat on that one. There's lots new under the sun, isn't there? You know, even this is something, being able to, you know, press a button and find out where you are anywhere in the country. You know, there is, seems like there's a lot new under the sun. But I think when Solomon was talking about that, he was not looking at technology. The Bible is not a textbook on technology. It's not a textbook on modern terminology. The Bible is a textbook, if you will, on the heart. And it's a textbook about the heart of a God, a loving and holy God, who from the beginning of time has been searching for us and who's been calling to us and reaching out to us. I love the phrase that other religions are man reaching out to God, but Christianity is God, and Judaism, by the way, is God reaching out to man. And so it's a textbook of the heart of God reaching out to you and to me. And the Bible is also a textbook about the heart of people who have, as Steve has said so well, have been created to love God and to love other people, but we so easily take that desire and we nail it to everything else, our addictions, all these other things that we so easily turn to. And so maybe when we look at the Bible, it's a textbook about the human heart, and in that regard, maybe there's nothing new under the sun when it comes to our hearts. And I was thinking, you know, just as a couple examples, 4,000 years ago, you know, people killed their brother. Do we still kill our brother today? You know? Then you know, you might hit somebody with a rock, and now we can do it by splitting the atom, but we still kill our brother. And 4,000 years ago, people would steal. They'd take your money purse, and do we, you know, is there still people stealing today? You know, now we can do internet identity theft, embezzlement, but it's still stealing. So maybe when it comes to the human heart, there's nothing new under the sun. 4,000 years ago, people committed idolatry. And so we're going to wonder about, is there nothing new, anything new under the sun in that regard? So let's look for a minute at the story of Josiah. And, if you could turn to 2 Kings, I had to bring this Bible. Because for some reason we need to file a complaint with the people that make the pew Bibles, because they keep every year making the print smaller and smaller. And so I had to bring this large print edition that has very big words, so it's very thick and heavy. But anyway, so a little background, you know, this is after the time of David, after the time of King Solomon. Solomon had built the temple in Israel. And after Solomon, after he died, the kingdom was divided. And it was divided into Judah. I think Judah was in the south, wasn't it, Steve? Judah in the south, Israel in the north. And God had warned his people when they went into the land, do not learn about the religions of the other people and do not learn about their gods. Because if you do, your heart might be drawn away to those other gods and you'll worship them. And God knew that that was their tendency, and he warned them about that, but they didn't listen. And sure enough, his people began to become interested in the gods of the lands, Baal, as David read, Asherah, Moloch, Chemosh. And by the time of Josiah and by the time of the kings, a lot of the times the kings themselves were worshiping these false gods. The people were, the kings were, and even to the point of bringing these false gods into the temple. So they had statues for Baal and Asherah inside the temple. Just outside of the city walls of Jerusalem, they had idol to Moloch. And so this is the environment into which Josiah, the child king, was born. And Josiah, when he was 18, some money had been gathered, and he said that the temple had fallen into disrepair. And he said to his helper, the secretary, take the money and pay the workers and have them fix the temple. Okay? And while they were fixing the temple, they found something. Okay? And so that's the part of the story that we start with. And let me just pick up in verse 8, okay? It says, Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the secretary, I have found the book of the law in the temple of the Lord. And he gave it to Shaphan, who read it. Then Shaphan the secretary went to the king and reported to him, your officials have paid out the money that was in the temple of the Lord and have entrusted it to the workers and have the supervisors in the temple. Then Shaphan the secretary informed the king, Hilkiah the priest has given me a book. And Shaphan read from it in the presence of the king. Now, any of you that have been over to my house know that housekeeping is not the top on my list, nor is it the top on Sue's list. And we have places in our house where stuff accumulates. And one of those places is under our bed. And once about every 5 years, one of us gets brave and we move the bed and we find stuff in the debris, cobwebs. They're not dust bunnies, they're like dust elephants under there. And, you know, bunch of trash. And every once in a while, we'll say, oh, that's where that was. I've been looking for that. I wondered where that went. And that's almost what this seems like to me. It seems like the temple had fallen into so much disrepair and the people had not had regard for the word of the Lord for so long that they had forgotten it. Oh, what's this? It's the book of the law. Okay? And I want to take a minute and think about what does that mean for God's people to have lost the book of the law? And in order to do that, we have to move our GPS, and we got to go to Mount Sinai for a minute. And I want to think about Moses coming down from the mountain with the two tablets. Can we have the picture of Moses with the two tablets? I think I got a picture somewhere. No picture? Oh, I'll have to illustrate it. I'll do a role play. Okay, so I'm Moses, and I'm coming down from the temple, and I have a tablet in this hand and a tablet in this hand, right? You guys have seen Charlton Heston, the Ten Commandments, Moses coming down. And if you look carefully at that picture, it looks like there's five commandments on this one and five commandments on that one, and that makes sense. Oh, yeah, there he is. Okay. So he's coming down from the temple, and he has the commandments, and it makes sense. If there's 10 commandments and two tablets, there'd be five on each one, right? This actually is incorrect. What God was doing at this time is he was enacting a cultural practice that Moses understood and the people understood, and that is how do two people groups make a covenant with each other? And the way that they did that is they would write all of the covenant on one tablet and all of the covenant on the other tablet. And then you would take one copy to your home and your people, and I would take one copy to my home and my people. And we still kind of do this, like with mortgages. I have a copy of the mortgage. The bank has a copy of the mortgage. We each have the whole thing. So really what this should be is all of the Ten Commandments should be on one. All of the Ten Commandments should be on the other. Does that make sense? And so the question is, why did Moses have both? Is it because God couldn't take one up into heaven? God could do anything he wants. Why did Moses have both of them? And friends, this is where the story really starts to get beautiful. Because what Moses did is he took those Ten Commandments, the two tablets, and he put them in a box called the Ark of the Covenant. We might have a picture of that too, maybe. I don't know. Oh, yeah, there it is. So he put them in the box, okay? And he took a lamb and he sacrificed the lamb and he sprinkled it with blood because without blood, there is no remission of sin, right? And then God's Holy Spirit came into their presence. And you see, when I realized this, when I started to understand this, people tend to think of this as a book of do's and don'ts, a list of rights and wrongs, right? But to God, that's not at all what it is. To God, this is a love letter. To God, this is a marriage contract. Because what God is saying is, when he gave Moses both tablets, he said, your people will be my people. Your home will be my home. And the God of the universe wants so much to be close to his people that he was willing to leave his throne and come and live on the top of a box so he could be close to his people. Okay? And so, folks, the significance of his people losing the law is the same thing as them forgetting that they were married. It'd be like if one day I woke up and for 5 years I just forgot that I was married to Sue. How would that make Sue feel? Because that's how God felt when they lost the law. It's like, oh, it's not very important to us. It's just going to get buried. So the first thing that Josiah did is he prioritized the law of the Lord in their lives. Okay? Let's read on. When the king, starting in verse 11, when the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his robes. He gave these orders to Hilkiah, the priest, Ahikam, son of Shaphan, Achbor, son of Micaiah, Shaphan, the secretary, and Asaiah, the king's attendant, go and inquire of the Lord for me, for all the people, and for all Judah about what is written in this book that has been found. Great is the Lord's anger that burns against us, because our fathers have not obeyed the words of this book, and they have not acted in accordance with all that is written there concerning us. So the first thing that Josiah did is he prioritized the word of the Lord. The second thing that he did was he feared the jealous anger of the Lord. And I remember, I want to tell you about the time I first learned about jealous anger. Sue and I were married, or we were actually engaged. We were about within 3 weeks of getting married. And we had been in Illinois. I was in school in Illinois, and we were coming back to Michigan. And we stopped at this truck stop. And our air conditioner didn't work, and so we were hot. And she had gone in and got something for us to drink, and I was pumping the gas. And there was somebody standing by this car over there, and it was the kind of car that we had thought about getting. I was going to buy us a car for our wedding, maybe. And so I went over to talk to this person, and Sue came back to the car and waited for me while I was chatting with this person. And she was hot, and she was getting frustrated. And she drove up, and I was talking to this person, and she drove away. And left me. Now, I forgot to tell you that this person was 24 and was a female. and she had what Sue describes either as booty shorts or Daisy Duke shorts. Take your pick. Tank top on. And she was laying on the hood of her car. And when I saw Sue, you know, the only word that comes to my mind is visage. Her visage changed. And for the first time in my life, I saw jealous anger. Okay? And the reason is because we were engaged to be married. And she thought that my heart was going somewhere else. And she had jealous anger. And friends, the only way that you can understand idolatry is if you understand that to God, it is adultery. Idolatry is adultery. Let's look at Jeremiah 3 if you want to, or you can just listen. I'm going to start with verse 6. It says, during the reign of King Hosea, the Lord said to me, have you seen what faithless Israel has done? She has gone up on every high hill, under every spreading tree, has committed adultery there. I thought that after she had done all of this, she would return to me, but she did not. Her unfaithful sister Judah saw it, and I gave faithless Israel her certificate of divorce and sent her away because of all of her adulteries. Yet I saw that her unfaithful sister Judah had no fear, and she also went out and committed adultery. Because Israel's immorality mattered so little to her, she defiled the land and committed adultery with stone and with wood. In spite of all of this, her unfaithful sister Judah did not return to me with all of her heart, but only in pretense, declares the Lord. So to God, idolatry is adultery. And so the first thing that Josiah did is he prioritized the holy law of the Lord. The second thing that he did is he feared the jealous anger of the Lord. And then the third thing that Josiah did is he purged the temple of the false, these idols. He purged the idols out of the temple of the Lord. And so let's look at that. Starting in chapter 23. Then the Lord called together all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. He went up on the temple of the Lord with the men of Judah, the people of Judah, the priests and all the prophets, and all the people from the least to the greatest. He read in their hearing all of the words of the book of the covenant, which had been found in the temple of the Lord. The king stood by the pillars. He renewed the covenant. So he's renewing from his standpoint, he's renewing the marriage vows in the presence of the Lord, to follow the Lord, keep his commandments and regulations and decrees with all of his heart, with all of his soul, thus confirming the words of the covenant written in the book. Then all the people pledged themselves to the covenant. And then the king ordered Hilkiah, the high priest, the priest next in rank, the doorkeepers, to remove from the temple of the Lord all the articles made for Baal in Asherah and all the starry host. He burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of the Kidron Valley, took the ashes to Bethel. And then in verse 10, he desecrated Topheth, which was in the valley of Ben-Hinnom, so that no one could use it to sacrifice his sons or daughters in the fire to Moloch. And let me just tell you briefly about these idols. Baal was, the word Baal means Lord, and there was lots of Baals. Each region could have a Baal. And so Baal was sort of like my local deity, or the deity over my local area. Asherah was the goddess, a female consort of Baal. She was the goddess of beauty, the goddess of sexual pleasure. Moloch just means king. And at their most depraved times in Israel, people would actually sacrifice children to Moloch outside of Jerusalem in a valley called Ben-Hinnom, which actually later became Jesus' word for hell, Gehenna, interestingly. But as I studied these folks, what God brought to my mind is there's some ways that I still worship these gods, okay? Baal is selfishness, okay? And there's been times in my life when I have put self on the throne, okay? I have worshiped sexual beauty. I've worshiped sexual pleasure in my life. I've bowed at that throne. I want to be king over my own life. To some extent, these gods have to do with success and prosperity and security. I haven't worried too much about those, but one thing that I realize is I have the need to appear competent. I fear being incompetent, and so I've been controlling in order to appear competent. And the interesting thing is that whenever people worship idols, and we could talk a lot about this, and I'm not going to, children always lose, okay? If you're a man and you worship idols, your wife loses. Your children lose. If you're a woman and you worship idols, your children lose. Okay? Children always suffer when we worship idols. So the third thing that Josiah did is he purged the temple of the idols. And then the last thing that Josiah did is, covered in the blood of the Lamb, he renewed the Passover of the Lord. And there's a parallel account in Chronicles where it says that Josiah took 37,000 lambs and 3,800 bulls, and they were sacrificed. Friends, there was enough blood for everybody. Okay. And it was hearkening back to the time of Egypt, where God was judging the gods of Israel, and he says that, I will judge the false gods of Israel. And the last judgment was, he went through and he killed the firstborn of all of the people, because that's what Pharaoh had done. He was judging that. And he told his people to take a lamb and to slaughter it and to put blood on the door frame and on the mantles. For he said, when I see blood, I will pass over you. Okay? I could be the poster child. If there was a group called Idolatry Anonymous, I could be their poster child. Okay? From the times that I worshiped selfishness and sexual pleasure and control in my own life. But friends, when God looks at me, I'm declared not guilty. And it's really important to know why I'm not guilty. I'm not guilty, but it's not because I didn't sin. And I'm not guilty, but it's not because God's unaware of my sin. And I'm not guilty, but it's not because God winks at sin. Because God is holy and he's jealous. The reason why I'm not guilty is because when God sees me, there's blood over the door frame of my life, okay? I'm going to wrap up here in just a minute. Our time is running out already. Let's have Ron will come forward in just a minute and play for us. As he does, you know, if there's anything that I've said today that God's maybe touching your heart, respond as you would like, as God would like you to. You know, maybe for some people you didn't realize that how much God wants to live with you. And it's beautiful because Jeremiah, the prophet who lived with the same time as Josiah, he wrote, let me just read this beautifully because the story doesn't quite end there. Jeremiah says in chapter 31, the time is coming when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. It will not be like the other covenant I made with their forefathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke my covenant, though I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after that time. I will put my law in their minds. I will write it on their hearts. And I will be their God, and they will be my people. Friends, stone tablets weren't good enough for God. He wants to put his law in your minds. A box wasn't good enough for God. He wants to put his law in your heart. And living on the top of a box, like he did with the Jews, wasn't good enough. This is the temple into which he wants to come. Okay? And so, if you'd like to do that, come forward. Perhaps you're like me, and you've kind of forgotten that you're married to God. And you need to renew your covenant like Josiah did with your marriage to God. Perhaps you've allowed idols into the temple, whatever those might be. There's lots of different idols, folks, that we can make more important than God. So come forward. Come to the cross if you want to. If you want someone to pray with you, come here. If you want to pray by yourself, come to this altar. And let God work in your life in whatever way that he would want to. And invite the blood of the Lamb to come over the doorpost of your life. Amen.